The Business Buzz Podcast. The Business Buzz.
Good day and welcome to The Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on Voice of Wits. That's Vow FM 88.1. We're broadcasting live from our studios in Bloemfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Mliwa Mob, Justice Gavaz, and I'll be your host for the next hour or so. Now, who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to unpack and keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now, the country is still facing a pandemic in the form of COVID-19 and following lockdown regulations, though we are moving to the third level of that lockdown as from the 1st of June, that should be next week, Monday, and most companies will start operating and a quarter of employees are expected to report to work. Now, it's been estimated that more than a third of South African businesses plan to cut and restructure businesses, their jobs due to the global pandemic. And then unfortunately, coupled with that is the fact that there are a lot of employees that have not been receiving their salaries during the lockdown period. So for today, we are continuing with the conversation that we started last week around the Unemployment Insurance Fund, or UIF, together with their COVID-19 TERS benefit, which the government has come up with as a way to supplement incomes during this time. So for today, we're going to be getting an employer and a trade union perspective on the matter to continue that conversation. And to help us unpack the topic, we're going to be talking to Robert Lee, who is the head of the labor work stream that is at Business for South Africa, which is a federation of organizations that includes the Black Business Council and Business Unity SA. He also serves as the chairman of a law firm that is Bowman's Law. And we're also going to be talking to Phakamile Hlubi Majola, who is a spokesperson for the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa. And they're going to be telling us both about the UIF from a business and that labor union's point of view. Also coming up in the next hour, we're going to be giving you the business wrap. That's the part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business economics news. And for the first time during the lockdown, we're going to be having our financial expert, financial advisor Zanele Kunene joining us. And then on the other side of that, we'll give you our business, the business of your 100 Rand in our Buffalo Index. So remember that you can keep in touch with us. You can find us online. We are Voice of Vids, that is VOW FM 88.1 on Facebook. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Vids Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we're at VOW FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. Remember that you can also stream the station live on VOWFM.co.za, and podcasts of the Business Buzz Show are available on vids.journalism.co.za/business. But for those that want to, you know, go about with their own apps, you can find us on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. So that's how the show is looking like. Definitely make sure you don't turn that dial. We're here for the next hour. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Business Wrap with Zanele Kunene.
It's time for us to get into the Business Wrap. That's the part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we are joined by a financial advisor at BDO Wealth Advisors, that is Zanele Kunene. We haven't heard from her, you know, since we started doing the shows during this lockdown period. Zanele, are you well? Are you alive? How are things? You know, have you been coping?
Hi, Mudiwa. I've been doing well, you know, washing my hands, keeping safe. And so much has happened in the past few weeks, considering the lockdown and how it's impacted all of our lives. But today I'd like us to focus on the interest rate cut. For the reason that 60 to 70% of South Africans earn less than 6,000 Rand, and about 14% of the adult population fall under the middle class category. But both of these groups are reliant on debt. And what we've seen is that COVID has pushed both of these groups to become more reliant on debt And this is because, you know, some businesses have closed down, increased retrenchments, and so the like. So we're seeing a higher reliance on debt. And that explains why there's been such an aggressive cut with regard to interest rate cuts. It's to help both of these groups survive in such a time. But I've also been thinking that without debt, do we actually have a middle class? Does it exist? But that's a conversation for another day. But let's get back to the interest rate cuts. So what they also show us is the outlook or the growth outlook of the country. Now, if we look at South Africa, having come from a recession, our budget in itself was not put together to generate growth. It was our budget for this year was to stabilize the economy. So it also does not assist in growing. Helping us with the growth of the country. We also are looking at a slower global growth as well. So all the slowdown, what it means for you and me is that business profits go down, more unemployment, and just less consumer activity, like less spending because we'd have less money to do so. And the problem then is that if we're quite a lot of issues within our country if we're looking at our unemployment rate. So it's a grim outlook, you know, as to what to expect in the future. But what we tell our clients at BDO and what I'm going to be saying to you is also that we cannot control what happens in the future and all the uncertainties and stuff like that. But what we can do is we can review our finances. Always focus on the things that you can control. So if you look at Warren Ingram's approach to getting our finances in order, his step one is to, first of all, pay off all debt. Now, the interest rate cuts have helped us within this sense because if you have a 20-year bond, you could be paying it off in 17 years or 16 years if you keep your payments as are now, that you don't take the interest rate cut, meaning you continue paying what you were paying all these months so that you shorten the time period of your payments. So it is a great time for you to reach out to your credit facilities and to discuss a payment plan so that you're able to, you know, get rid of that debt sooner. The second step that Warren shares is that build an emergency fund. An emergency fund is made up of 4 to 6 months worth of your household expenses. So that does mean that more involvement is required from the whole family with regard to the household finances, and especially if you are one of many of us who have black tax over our shoulders. So it's the best time for us now to have the conversation with our family. And the third thing that he shares with us is that investing, then you can only invest, but invest consistently. Investment is not a 6 month thing or 7 month thing or I'm having a good day or bad day. No, investment needs you to be consistent and also to have an objective as to what it is you're trying to reach. So with all these policies and all these contracts you're opening, what was the objective for it and when is it that you'd need the fund? So if you've already paid off your debt, you have your emergency savings, your investments would be able to grow without being impacted by any movements in your life. So you will not be grabbing from the investments during a lockdown, if you understand what I mean. One of the interesting things that I found in closing was that South Korea have also implemented interest rate cuts, so as other countries, but they've implemented those cuts because they are now facing a second wave of coronavirus infections. So South Africa, you know, we are still finding our rhythm as to testing and as to where we stand with regard to corona. So for us, we do not know how the future is going to look. But as I said, focus on what you can control, and that is to review your finances and to build yourself within those boundaries and get your finances in order.
Zanele, just as a follow up to what you've just said, I definitely agree with you that the interest rate cuts have been quite aggressive, and especially when you think about the indebtedness of people in South Africa, it certainly does make sense that from the Reserve Bank's point of view, you are you're relieving, consumers on one end and possibly spurring some type of spending on the other. But do you anticipate that they have sort of reached their limit in terms of cuts now? Or do you think they can, you know, perhaps go down a bit further, maybe even touching these 0% rates that we're seeing in the US?
I read that we are as low as we were, the interest rates are as low as they were in 1973. So we have reached the lowest interest rates for South Africa. And I believe that government is going to have to look at other measures in terms of how to rescue South Africa, or how to safeguard us, because cutting interest rates cannot be our only response to safeguarding people. So in terms of how the Reserve Bank would go about doing so, I have no idea if they're going to be cutting the interest rates further, but it is a possibility unless government finds other ways of, you know, safeguarding us.
That's actually quite scary when you think about the fact that that's the lowest since the 1970s. I did not know that. And now that I'm thinking about it, the magnitude is quite something. But on the last point, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of our listeners that may have listened in the past and know that you are, you know, dealing a lot with, you know, people's personal finances. Any advice for people that are sitting there right now, going through the crisis and wondering, you know, how do I stretch my money during this time?
It always starts with number one step, which is budget. And I think people underestimate how important a budget is. A budget tells you if you are making a profit in your life. Like, are you making a profit at all? And what we find is that quite a lot of people are operating at a loss, but they don't look like it, because of credit. You know, they're using credit to mask that. So once you put together a budget, and be very honest with yourself, go through your bank statements thoroughly. Like, have a good framework as to where it is you're currently standing. Then look in terms of where it is you could be more resourceful, more flexible, put those cuts in place. And very important, also have the conversation with your family. If you have a partner or a spouse, speak to them in terms of what's happening within the finances. If you're supporting your family back home, or you're supporting extended family as well, have that conversation with them in terms of where it is you're currently standing, so that you could be financially healthy as well. Because if you're not financially healthy and you're the breadwinner, everyone else is also not going to be. So it's no use in you placing yourself in an uncomfortable position.
So you've heard it right there. That was us with Zanele Kunene, financial advisor at BDO Wealth Advisors, just giving us a roundup of the week's business and economics news. She was focusing a lot just around interest rates and some of the reasons why the Reserve Bank has, you know, likely cut the rates so low, and especially focusing on how indebted South Africans are and how, you know, this time might be a crunch time for them. Also just ending off by giving some tips around how to stretch your money. And one of the things I like, she said, you just need to be honest with yourself. Have a budget in place, but more than anything else, just be honest with yourself about, you know, what's coming in and what's going out, and have those important conversations with your family. So that's been it in terms of the business wrap. On the other side of this, we get into the Buffalo Index.
Business Wrap with Zanele Kunene. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to tell you the state of your 100 Rand in our Buffalo Index. That's the part of the show where we'd like to let you know what your 100 Rand can do for you today. Now, as from Monday onwards, one of the things we've spoken about a little bit during the lockdown period has been this ban on alcohol and cigarette sales. And because we're moving to level 3, a lot of people are going to be excited because the sale of alcohol will be permitted. So I decided to go online and just check to see what can we do to help people, you know, because if the pictures out of countries like India, where they eased up restrictions and there were queues that went for kilometers long of people trying to buy their alcohol, is anything to go by, then one or two people may find themselves outside of a bottle or liquor store for some time. So to help you, to aid you during this time, perhaps it might be a good idea to pick up one of those simple party chairs that you see at venues all the time. Your Buffalo can get you one of those very easily for 89 Rand. But if you want to go, you know, a little bit more posh, you can get yourself a fancy camping chair. And these usually start for about 2.5 Buffalo, so about 270 Rand can get you in to one of those camping chairs that nicely folds up, and you can take it with you in a nice bag, and it has the little pouch where you can have a bottle or some water or something. And speaking of that bottle or something, if you want an Addis bottle, it's a common brand that we use out there. You can actually get two water bottles for your Buffalo because each one is about 49 Rand. If you want to keep yourself hydrated. But otherwise, if you want to go hardcore, you can get yourself a 2.2 liter water bottle for a straight Buffalo. That's 100 Rand. And then at the same time, because you know you've found a good spot in the queue just before the bottle store opens, you're probably going to be there for some time, so you're sitting there now, you've got your water or whatever you're drinking, it's in the nice pouch in the chair, but you might also be listening to music or keeping yourself entertained somehow. So if you want to be listening to music, you can get yourself a pair of in-ear headsets that you know, I think they're starting at around 30 Rand, so it means your Buffalo can get you three of those for that one Buffalo. And if you want to go a bit fancier than that and get yourself some AirPod-style earbuds, these are the completely wireless ones that are out there. You can just sacrifice about three Buffaloes, and that will help you to, you know, pass the time whilst you're sitting in that queue. So that's how the Buffalo Index is looking for today. If you find yourself by any chance sitting outside of a liquor store, you know, trying to while up time, then you may want to get yourself a camping chair, and you may want to get yourself a water bottle to keep yourself hydrated and be listening to music at the same time. See, we care at the Business Bus. So that's been it in terms of the Buffalo Index. On the other side of this, we get into the main topic.
The Buffalo Index on the Business Bus. Mob Justice on the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. Today we are talking about UIF. We're continuing our conversation from last week. Last week we were sort of getting into sort of the basic stuff, trying to understand it. But today we want to get you know, deeper into the issue and just getting more voices around this particular issue. As we understand from last week, the UIF is an unemployment benefit that people get, but the TERS, or the Temporary Employee Employer Relief Scheme, is something that is separate, though it is happening through the UIF system. So to shed light just from you know, the business community's perspective, we are joined by Robert Lee, who is the head of the labor stream at Business for South Africa, a federation that includes organizations like Business Unity SA and the Black Business Council. Robert, how are you?
Good evening, Madiwa, and thanks very much for inviting me, and good evening to your listeners.
Okay, so I think just to begin with, we understand you guys are a federation as Business for South Africa. Could you just shed some light around perhaps how that came, you know, came to be, and, you know, what was the reason for, you know, forming Business for SA?
Look, it was an early response to the looming COVID crisis. So it was kind of put together in probably March, early to mid-March. There was a general view that business needs to rally around in as unified a way as possible. And that's sort of been the underlying theme, and the sort of one of the main objectives is to try and work with government and to see in what way business can assist in essentially dealing with the COVID-19 crisis. So it started back then, and it's kind of multifaceted. I lead the what's called a labor work stream, but there are a variety of other work streams. There's an economics work stream. There's a health work stream, which has been instrumental in sourcing PPE equipment. There's a risk work stream. There's a civil society work stream, which is a link between business and civil society. And there are a variety of others, but and it's supported by a project management office. You know, there are probably 200 or 300 people drawn from business who are working pretty much full time on a pro bono basis in these various work streams. So that's a kind of an overview of how it's been working.
Now, I want us to switch our attention, you know, now that we understand how you guys came about, perhaps as a way for business to, you know, anticipate some of the issues that would come about. And one of the issues that really has come to the fore is businesses being unable to either maintain their staff at their current levels or maintaining enough revenues on hand to pay full salaries. And one of the things that has come in is this COVID-19 TERS benefit. Could you give us just some insight into what this thing is and how employees and employers can actually go about applying for it? Because it certainly does seem as if there's some confusion about what it is and how people go about this thing, especially the communication side of things.
Yes. Unfortunately, the communications around it have been very poor. But at the heart of it is this fund, the Unemployment Insurance Fund, and essentially anybody who's in employment, formal employment, pays contributions towards that fund. And that fund has got general obligations when people lose their jobs or are on maternity leave or are sick, etc., and it's got those general kind of legal obligations. Because of the onset of COVID and particularly the lockdown essentially shut a vast number of South African businesses in a very short order, and essentially put employers in a position where they couldn't operate and they couldn't pay their employees, need developed to establish some kind of remedy to help employees during the lockdown period. It was originally, it was sort of the idea was put together also in the middle of March, and it essentially at that stage focused on three things. Firstly, a company had to be in distress, and secondly, it only applied where an employee had no income at all, so that was the kind of basic requirement. Through an engagement between what we call the social partners at NEDLAC, we have developed that benefit to be a much wider benefit. So the challenges with a company in distress is that you had to prove that the company was in distress. That is no longer a requirement. The second dimension of expansion was that it no longer applied to people who had no income at all. It basically applied to anybody who had lost income as a consequence. And you know, there are companies where people have been able to get part pay but not full pay, and so on. And then the third dimension is that previously the business had to be completely closed, and now it applies if you work in part of a business which has been closed. So we broadened that dimension. And the other thing is that ordinary unemployment benefits are usually applied for on an individual basis. So if you are retrenched, the employee make an application to the fund and you claim your amounts. But there are about 11 million people in employment in South Africa. And if everybody had to apply, multiple applications, it would significantly hamper the system. So the scheme was devised that employers would make the applications on behalf of employees, and then the monies would be paid from the fund to the employers, who then had to pay the money over to employees. The benefit is there's a kind of a sliding scale depending on what you earn, but it basically ranges between a minimum of 3,500 rand a month to I think something like 6,700 rand a month. Now, for many employees in this environment, that could be it's not a lot of money, but it could be the difference between surviving and starving. I should also mention that it does only apply to employees, so it doesn't apply to independent contractors. And there's been a push to try and expand the fund to include other people, but under the legal mandate of the fund, there has to be an employment relationship in place. So that, in simple terms, was how the fund was established. Just to give you an example of what has been paid out, I think for the month of April, something close to 15 billion rand has been paid out. And 3 million employees have benefited out of that. So the rough figure of 11 million employees in the labor market, in the formal labor market. So 3 million of those people claimed those benefits. And for some businesses, if people are in the hospitality industry, or the tourism industry, like restaurants or hotels or whatever, those businesses have been closed since the lockdown, and they're not going to open soon. And so for a lot of employees in that situation, it's been not a huge benefit, but I think a very important benefit. So that's a kind of an overview of the benefit and how it's been paid out until now. Unfortunately, there have been this is administered by the Unemployment Insurance Fund. It falls under the Department of Labor. It's quite a creaky organization. I wish I could say it was like opening a new banking app and getting set up on that basis, and then you can lodge your forms. I mean, it has been, the actual practicalities of it have been really difficult for employers.
Yeah, because actually, I like the fact that you are heading, down that road, because I think that sounds like it's been, I don't know where the actual bottleneck is. Maybe you can shed some light, because on the one hand, you have employers saying that the system is confusing or the system isn't going the way that it's meant to go. But at the same time, you also have some employees accusing employers of, cheating them out of this benefit. Where do you see things in this, on that front?
Look, it's gone through permutations. Certainly in the first while, it was majorly problematic. So to give an example, an employer would make a claim, and you've got to itemize who your employees are and what they earn. And then the UI fund would just pay them a lump sum amount, and it wouldn't say what money was supposed to go to what employee. The other quite big gremlin, and they fixed that. So then employers were told that they could get benefits. But then you had weird situations, like somebody, an employer would say apply for 100 employees, and They'd get money for 70 employees. And then there wouldn't be an explanation of what happened to the other 30 employees. And, I mean, what's proved very difficult is that essentially the main form of communication is through a call center, which was very understaffed. People were undertrained. And the reality is that there are literally thousands of unresolved queries out there. A big thing that we've picked up and which we are still struggling with is that in South Africa there are a large number of foreign employees. And when I'm talking about foreign employees, I'm not talking about people who are here illegally, but they are legally employed. So, for example, in the restaurant industry, you'll find a lot of foreigners, particularly people from Zimbabwe, work in that. And they are fully entitled to the benefits because the employer has been deducting money and paying it over to the fund for years and years and years. But what's happened in this thing is that the system can't pick up, because these people don't have South African ID numbers, it can't pick them up. And there are literally tens of thousands and maybe more foreign employees who haven't been paid. And they haven't been paid now for 2 months. So there are a lot of ongoing gremlins. But to be fair to the Department of Labor and the UI Fund, where blockages have been identified, and this is one of the things that we as business are trying to do, we've identified the blockages, we've raised it with them, and a lot of those blockages have been removed. So, you know, the reality is that, as I said earlier, 15 billion rand has been paid to 3 million employees, and of that number, that's been funneled through about 200,000 employers. So they've had to process 200,000 applications on their IT system over a kind of 6 week period. They've done it, you know. So has there been substantial payment? Yes, probably. I think there's about another 2 billion rand which is unallocated, because that's kind of blocked in the system where there are queries and so on. So has there been substantial success? Definitely. Is it like registering for a new banking app? Definitely no. But, you know, there are many frustrations that we're all experiencing in this COVID-19 world, and ultimately quite a lot of money, it's not quite a lot of money, a very significant amount of money has been made available to people who are covered by the scheme.
So that's been us with Robert Lee, who is the head of the Labour Workstream at Business for South Africa, which is a federation that includes organizations such as Business Unity SA and the Black Business Council. He's just giving us a roundup of the COVID-19 temporary employee-employer relief scheme, and just giving some thoughts around how it came about and some of the thinking that led to the system being developed, who is entitled to it, how do people apply, and also just highlighting the fact that as much as there has been a lot of confusion, there have been, you know, some good things that have come about, such as the fact that over 15 billion rand has been paid out to about 3 million people so far. So from that point of view, there are positives, though there are areas that it could be improved on. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we're going to be hearing from the unions just around this UIF issue. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. We are talking about, you know, understanding the UIF, understanding, you know, some of these issues as we have been over the last 2 weeks, and to perhaps give another view, especially from an important stakeholder in the conversation. We are going to be turning to the trade union sector right now. But before we get into that, remember that you can find us on social media. We are VowFM, Voice of Wits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is Wits Radio Academy, and then on Twitter we're at VowFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So as we go on, we're joined by on the line by Phakamile Hlubi Majola, who is the national spokesperson for the largest trade union in the country, that is the National Union of Metalworkers of South Africa, otherwise known as NUMSA. Phakamile, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and thank you so much for having me. Are you?
No, we're doing all right, just considering everything that's going on. I guess just as a starting point, NUMSA, we've already said you guys are no strangers to, you know, to the media. Lots of people know NUMSA, but for those few that don't, who are you guys actually representing, and how have you found, I guess, the crisis to have gone for your members, given all the lockdowns at the moment?
Well, just a brief background. NUMSA is the biggest trade union in South Africa, as you correctly put it. We represent approximately 360,000 workers. And initially, when NUMSA was started, we were strictly a metals and engineering trade union, which organized workers in that space, in metals and engineering and auto space. But since 2013, when NUMSA held a special national congress, in 2013 it took a decision that it was going to extend its scope beyond metals and engineering to other industries along the value chain. So since then, we now also represent workers in infrastructure, in transportation, in mining as well, and along the value chain, which is why you'll hear us talking on SAA, you'll hear us talking on PRASA, you'll hear us talking on Telkom, because we've got members pretty much in a lot of the major sectors across the country. When we now get to the issue of COVID-19, and in particular how COVID-19 and the lockdown have affected workers, it's really been extremely difficult for the working class in South Africa. From the time when government made the announcement around the lockdown, I think you guys actually interviewed us around this, and we had already raised the alarm to say that the measures which government has put in place so far are going to cause problems in the long term on the ground, and are going to create a lot of distress for workers and their families. And unfortunately, we've been proven correct. One of the measures that government implemented was the UIF Temporary Employment Relief Scheme, which allows companies that are not operating during the lockdown to apply for funding so that they can pay workers' salaries. We've had a myriad of challenges around this, particularly because, you know, for you to be able to get the benefit of TERS, as a company, you must be registered with UIF. Our experience as a union is that many companies, while they might deduct money for UIF because the law demands that they must, often they're not even registered for UIF. And that has proven to be a huge challenge in the paying out of the temporary employment relief scheme, because many workers have actually not received money. In many cases, the payment has either been delayed or not done at all because of issues around a lack of compliance on the side of the employer. There's also been problems just in getting the applications done. Unfortunately, the South African labor or the South African economy, a lot of employers in South Africa are extremely racist, and the manner in which they engage with workers is very backward. They still have this sort of Bruderbund mentality
when dealing with workers, especially black workers. And so there's this attitude of, you know, just a complete refusal to cooperate with us as labor and apply to the department so that workers can get salaries. So some of them will just simply say, it's a no work, no pay situation. You'll see to finish. And we've had many situations where such decisions were taken by employers. And as a union, we've had to intervene.
I guess as a follow-up to that, how have you found, I guess, the dissemination of information around this issue? Because it definitely sounds, just talking to people, it definitely sounds like there's a lot of confusion just around the TERS benefit that you you were talking about just now. And also a lot of people actually just not being aware that their companies are actually not registered, you know, with UIF and things like that. So in terms of disseminating information, either to companies or to employees themselves, how have you found that, I guess, on the side of the government and also on the side of employers just giving their employees, you know, an awareness of what's actually happening, what the financial situation is, and where they are in those processes?
It's been a very difficult time. And I think as much as, you know, on one level, we have picked up weaknesses, certainly on the side of government and the UIF. I think if you look at it within the context of this pandemic, we have to also acknowledge that the government was not prepared for this, and you can see that in this process, because the lockdown was announced on the 26th of March, but the COVID, this process of COVID and TERS only came days or maybe a week or so later, where UIF then came out and said, okay, this is something that you can apply to and utilize. And in fact, it was maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks in, when the Department of Labor came out very strongly and categorically to say employers may not force workers to accept no work, no pay when there is such a benefit which is available. So there was a problem certainly in terms of communication. And I think it was the communication more than anything that created a lot of the hiccups around this issue. Because what happened was, for those companies who've been dodging dodging the Department of Labor, they simply refused to apply because they were concerned that perhaps the department would take steps against them. And so we've had to do a lot of work to force companies to comply. Thankfully, now more recently, the Department of Labor has adjusted and amended some of the terms now to say that workers can apply directly. And I think if that had been the case from the beginning, it would have changed a lot of things. Because we have always said that it was wrong in the first place to put the power of this issue in the hands of employers. Because unfortunately, a lot of employers don't comply. But if you actually say that workers can apply directly, it becomes a different conversation. And now that they've done that, I think that's made a difference, and it's starting to help certainly in the backlog of paying out some of these salaries. The other issue is that it's very important for unions to be very involved and very engaged in this process. And the only way it's really going to work well is if unions work with management side by side with the UIF officials. Because the thing is, you apply today, then it gets processed. It does take a couple of days or a couple of weeks, depending on when you applied. And there's details and there's information sometimes that companies need to give that might be outstanding. But if all of us can work together in this process, it can help to smooth out some of the bureaucratic issues. If the employer on the one hand is doing the work of applying, and they keep the unions involved, and they keep them, you know, they update them, and we're updated regularly, then we can also do the work of assuring employees so that they don't panic if perhaps the payment isn't made on a particular day when they expect the payment should be made. Our problem, what we need really at this time, is for all stakeholders to work together, because it is understandable that many of us have not been in this situation before. We are all of us learning as we go and adjusting to the circumstances. And it really requires a lot of transparency and a lot of cooperation if we're actually going to be able to ensure that this process is handled properly.
Now, in addition to, you know, these no work, no pay policies that have been implemented by some companies, one of the other, I guess, results of, you know, the lockdowns and everything that's happened are pay cuts. And these pay cuts are one of the reasons why the tourist benefit was even instituted to begin with. Was there consultation with unions such as yours on that front?
Well, a consultation on the issue of pay cuts, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So let me explain that. If you're talking about TERS, right? In terms of the TERS, the TERS benefit is worked out like this. The salary amount maximum which TERS can pay out is 17,000 per month. If the employee's salary is more than that threshold of 17,000 per month, let's say they're earning 25,000 or 20,000, then they would only receive a percentage of that amount, of the total threshold amount. And so the difference, that's where, you know, for us, we would then have to do the work of negotiating with the company to say, look, could you maybe top up over and above what TERS is offering, because you know that your employees are earning more than that. That is the role of the union, to work and negotiate on behalf of workers so that that amount can be topped up at least, or to come to some kind of agreement between workers and management about what is to be done about that top up. If the employer can't afford a top up, what else can be done? What other measures can be implemented? Would workers be willing to agree to a pay cut? But that means you must engage. That's something that must be negotiated. We have a crisis right now at a company called Max Steel. It's a national company, quite a big steel company in South Africa, where our members have taken a decision to go on strike as of today. And the part of the reason that sparked the strike is that the company said that because of the lockdown, it's not generating enough revenue, and then it unilaterally took a decision without consulting anyone to cut salaries by 20%. Now, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, you do not have the right as an employer to wake up and just decide that you're going to cut salaries. It doesn't work like that. You have to actually negotiate and advise workers and come to an agreement where they agree to that type of arrangement. And this is the situation that has sparked the strike at Max Steel today. So I think more than anything, as I said earlier, what is really needed now is a spirit of cooperation, an attitude of saying, you know, as the president has said, that we're all in this together, then employers must behave like we are all in this together. You can't dictate and be arrogant in the manner in which you engage employees. Workers are not sheep. They're not children. You can actually speak to them and engage them and negotiate with them and come to a common understanding which works for both parties. What creates a lot of tension and strife and discord is when you don't do that, where your approach is very, very dictatorial. Then you're going to find a situation where workers get angry, and in the case of, example, Max Steel, they then resort to the most drastic step, which is to then embark on a strike.
Perhaps as an ending point to this discussion, as NUMSA, how have you found this crisis to have I guess, evolved some of the conversations around labor relations in South Africa. There are a lot of issues that existed pre the crisis, and there are a lot of issues that were heightened because of the crisis, as you've mentioned, whether it's around the UIF, whether it's around employers taking, you know, unilateral decisions, whether it's employees being informed about how certain systems work, you know, things like that. So as NUMSA going forward, how do you think, or what are some of the focus areas that you guys have found that this crisis has highlighted, and that you guys will be taking forward to say, you know, these things can't continue as they are right now. We need to address A, B, C, and D.
Well, I think more importantly, it's becoming more and more apparent that we have to be very, very flexible. We have to be very responsive, and those are things that we've had to do as a union. The limitations of the CCMA, for example, during the lockdown, the CCMA services were pretty much not available. So a lot of decisions employers took, knowing full well that we wouldn't have the recourse of the CCMA as an avenue to use in order to deal with certain issues, issues around non-payment, issues around, you know, unilateral change of conditions. And this for us is a really big issue. Going forward, we would require that institutions like CCMA, whose job it is to help us to resolve these kinds of issues, would have to find a way to make themselves available to us in order to deal with these types of situations and to deal with them quickly. Because whilst it might be true that the law says this is wrong and you can't do it, if there's no mechanism in place in terms of something punitive that can force an employer to comply, in the absence of that, workers are left on their own. And this is the crisis that we've experienced during this lockdown. We also want to stress that, you know, it is possible to find common ground. We've experienced this with companies like Hulamin. Hulamin is also another company that's based in KZN. And at first, we had really bad relations with them after the lockdown because they did not implement proper health and safety measures, and we had to intervene. But since then, we've been engaging a lot with management. And at the end of that process, we ended up at the end of that process coming up with a very, very progressive agreement where workers' salaries were guaranteed for the entire period of the lockdown. And this even included those workers who were either declared who were not essential and were sitting at home. Their salaries are guaranteed. Those who, for example, would be declared possibly COVID-19 positive and are quarantined, also are getting their salaries. And that's because we sat down with management together with shop stewards and employees, and we were taken through the finances of the company, where compromises needed to be made. Workers agreed to those compromises, but it was a meaningful process of engagement for us to arrive at that so that we could find a solution which works for everybody. So the short answer here is this. For us to resolve the crisis of COVID-19, we need to work together. We need to recognize that workers' rights are human rights and treat workers with dignity. And if we are going to approach this process with that attitude, we can actually find solutions which are progressive and that assist on both sides, that are not going to damage the balance sheet in the long term for the company, and are also going to ensure that workers receive their salaries throughout the period.
So that was us with Phakamile Hlubi-Majola, who is the spokesperson for the National Union for Metal Workers of South Africa, just giving us the union's point of view, or labor's point of view, just around what's been going on with the UIF, together with the relief that the government has given through UIF for, you know, just supplementing people's incomes. She's just highlighting at the end the fact that the crisis has really highlighted that certain institutions like the CCMA need to make themselves available even through some of these crisis times, and that going forward, it doesn't always need to be a a back and forth or a battle between labor and the private sector, that in some cases where collaboration happens, that it works to the benefit of everybody. So on the other side of this, we come to the end of the show.
The Business Buzz.
And with that, we've come to the end of today's Business Buzz. Thank you so much to our guests for sharing their insights with us. Thank you. Just unpacking what's going on the side of employers and also what's just going on the labor relations side. And for the people that are trying to help people on social media, at least to educate them and know what's going on out there. I think it's a good thing that at least people are concerned about this matter. One of the common threads over the last 2 weeks that we've heard is that there's a lot of confusion in and around this issue. But at the same time, despite that, people are aware and are giving government the benefit of the doubt just to say that this is not a situation that anyone was prepared for, and that for the most part, it has done what it's meant to do in terms of the UIF, in terms of the TERS benefits that is being given out there. But it also then highlights a new form of economics. I keep talking about this, that all of these issues just highlight the fact that we do need a new form of compassionate economics, at least in the short to medium term, as people try to get back on their feet. And a lot of that has to do with just having programs like what's going on right now with the TERS and UIF, but at the same time being able to effectively disseminate the information around it just so that everyone can benefit, because it's not one of those things that's meant to be selfish, because it's meant to be there to help everybody who isn't able to work or, you know, get that full salary at the moment, or for those that don't have their jobs anymore, you know, have something at the end of the month. So it's good to share information and just make sure that everyone is on the same page. So you can let us know what you think about on social media. What have been your experiences, if this is something that you've had to encounter or apply for? Remember that you can find us on Facebook. That's VowFM or Voice of Wits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VowFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. Remember that you can also search for us on iono.fm, where you can find our podcast and links. And you can also find all our content on vits.journalism.co.za/business. So that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Kutluano Zrame, with our executive producer Gloria Mabuza, together with our producer Silindile Msibi. Don't miss the Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Don't turn that dial. There's more great content coming up on the Vow FM lineup. So for myself, Mudiwa Mob, Justice Gavasa, and the rest of the team, it is good afternoon and take care.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz. The Business Buzz Podcast.